that resulted in a single token. So Solid Gold Magikarp is one token. And in GPT-2, if you ever mentioned Solid Gold Magikarp, it thought you were saying like F you or something. You got to look this up. There's like a YouTube video about it.
Wow, dude. Anytime
you said that, it would respond. It would like curse at you. It was really funny.
Alrighty, sup y'all, we've got the This Week in Bug Bounty segment for this week. We've got this week's This Week in Bug Bounty segment. and what we've got on the docket this time is a couple updates. Yes We Hack has a new article that came out not too long ago, Recon Series 6, and this is entitled Excavating Hidden Artifacts with Wayback Machine and Other Web Archive Tools, which I thought was particularly timely today because I am taking a break from hacking something during which I just had a breakthrough using these tools to come and tell you about these tools. So if you're not familiar with how to use Waymore, or if you're still using Gal like Yavoy was, then you should definitely read through this article and kind of get up to date on using Waymore to do a little bit more thorough investigation of the archive, Wayback Archive. Definitely a pivotal piece of technology for hackers. Also, I know that they're always raising funds. Like, they're always like, please give us money so that we can continue running this nonprofit. We need to keep this thing alive, guys, because countless crits have been popped because of the Wayback Machine. And this article is a really great way to sort of get up to date on it using Waymore, Link Finder, Gao, all sorts of stuff. So definitely check it out. All right. Second update is from a HackerOne disclosed report. This one was report 2817648. And check this out, guys. This is a C++ related error where sign traits derive bits, which is a C++ function in the Node.js core source code, may incorrectly call throw exception on user supplied input in the background process, crashing all of Node.js. So the reason this was relevant is because it actually, you can affect availability completely, and things getting passed into these cryptographic functions are often untrusted user input. So this is definitely something you want to keep an eye out for. I kind of went and checked at the patch for this, and essentially the patch was just checking whether it should be able to throw or not. And so I think that there's a couple ways that this could be exploited. Obviously, we don't want to affect availability too much. But if you have some way to fingerprint, it's running on an older version of Node.js, then this could be a really cool attack. And while I was researching it, I actually came across this other exploit that was released in that same May 2025 update, which is a improper header block termination in LHTTP, which is a piece of Node.js. And this was actually found by Ken Ballas, who is the guy from HTTP Garden, who we've talked about a couple times. And essentially, it allows for improper termination of HTTP1 headers using /r/n/rx rather than the required /r/n/r/n. So very, very interesting piece if you're interested in request smuggling. This could be something that you could use to potentially trigger some really impactful request smuggling vulnerabilities. It only got a medium and didn't get a ton of attention somehow. But I know that a lot of you guys have really intense HTTP request smuggling automation out there. So this would be a good one to toss on it. All right, that's all for the This Week in Bug Bounty segment. Let's go back to the show. All right, listen, dude, I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with you, okay?
Uh-huh.
This blog post, this is how they tell me bug bounty ends. Is this FUD, dude? Is this FUD or is this not FUD? Because I read it and I was like a little bit moved. But also, I'm like, I don't know.
I've been in some meetings with you where you felt pretty moved.
Yeah, I am moved. I am moved, and I'll be transparent about it. I mean, mm-hmm. It definitely, this blog post made me realize that if I want to be on the, if I really, really do want to stay ahead of the curve,
yep,
right, by a lot, then I need to start doing, AI agent based hacking now.
You need to be more enhanced by AI.
Yeah. And if I want to perform at the highest level,
yep,
right? I mean, yeah.
I think I think that the reason why I tweeted it in such a way where it's like, you might love this or you might hate this, and the reason why the blog post even reads in like an ambiguous, like just slightly ambiguous way, is because I feel the same way, right? I'm in the same boat as you. Like, it's hard for me to even tell if it is FUD, but it's just my honest opinion. And you know, maybe you'll tease out.
That haven't read the blog post, give us like the TLDR of it.
I think the major points I wanted to make was, people who are putting their head in the sand and they think that AI is not going to be able to do what human hackers can do, they're wrong. They're crazy. I think that, like, you know, I've met with a lot of Hackbot founders. I'm an advisor for Ethiac. And so I think that these models can definitely hack. And I think that the people on the other end of the spectrum are wrong too. Like, people who think that, you know, all the bug bounty hunters are going to be out of their job in 6 months or a year are also wrong. And so the tack that I would, you know, this blog post is basically me laying out what I think is going to happen. I guess I can give you like a 2-sentence summary of that. I basically think that the first step in the transition is going to be called like hacker in the loop, or, you know, basically human in the loop, but you're going to have like top hackers like you, or like, you know, other top hackers using AI to hack faster, better, smarter. And also to like the AI actually needs us to vet a lot of the, what it thinks is true positive, because it just takes a lot of context and a lot of skill to know really when something is a true positive.
Are we going to have that context though, if we're not in the weeds? Like, that is one of the things that's really interesting to me. Like, sure, I can be like, hey, look, here's the single point of failure in the system, right? Yep. If you can fuzz this and get it to return a domain that is not, you know,
blocked
in this specific allow list or whatever, then we've got an SSRF or whatever, yep, right? And then hand it to the AI and let it do all of the intelligent fuzzing, you know, and in context aware stuff. But that's me, you know, using the AI sort of as a tool, and my context is greater than the AI's context. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it's ever going to get to the point where my context is lower and the AI's context is greater, and that is how we hack.
Yeah. So let's, just for the topic of this conversation, it might not be called this, but for this conversation, let's call that a black bot hacking, like a hack bot, right? So for black box hack bots that basically are just like set to go hack on a domain. Mm-hmm. And then it comes back. It's like less of a tool and more of like a fully embodied agent, right? And then it comes back to you and it's like, hey, these are the leads. I think for a lot of those, you will be able to very quickly, like, let's say it came back to you as a front end guy and it's like, hey, I think there's a client side patch reversal here. Mm-hmm. And here's my request that's a POC. And here's the response from the, here's the response that appears. And here's the screenshot from the headless browser. Mm-hmm. You know, is this true? You know, you don't think you'd be able to vet it without having to like dig up some context?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you could. And so I think that that's the case. There will be some that are really complex. It's like, I don't know if this is working or not, you know, but I think that in general, those are going to be the ones that are the last to be found. I think that, like, you know, the AI says, I think XSS is popping here because here's the input, here's the response from the server, and here's the screenshot of the alert box. And you're like, well, that's a pretty close shut case, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
And so, so I think that it just really varies vulnerability to vulnerability. And maybe that's why it gets so complex to like talk about, is because there are some bugs that AI will like not be able to find for 10 years, maybe, or 30 years, right? Like, but there are a lot of other vulnerabilities that I think AI will be able to find. And as soon as the price point is low enough where they can spin up, well, I always call this the hackbot singularity, but if there's a point at which you can spin up a hackbot and it costs $10 to run, but it makes you $20 in bounties, any sane person is just going to spin up as many as they can until it becomes non-profitable, right?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, that's the same sort of thing you see with in applying those same principles from business with advertising and stuff like that, right? Like, if you have an advertising model that is generating you $10 and costs $5, then you're just going to keep pressing that button as fast as you possibly can. Yeah. And I can definitely see that happening. I definitely agree with you that it is more, I think there will be a lot of value to these agents that are, you know, black bot agents. But I think that the main thing that I'm convinced on right now, after our talks and and after just a couple timely interactions plus your blog post, right? Like, I fed something that I was working on to Gemini the other day, and Gemini like took it and like ran some tools to parse it and And really did some, and it was actually, it's interesting that we were talking about this off air about how, you know, it's a little bit less good with binary based stuff. Mm-hmm. This was one of those cases where it was like base 64 encoded binary protocol, and it like dealt with it. And I was like, Oh my gosh, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's a little pro tip. Anytime you're dealing with something that requires like tough accuracy, I was dealing with like a neat like AI related kind of bypass I was working on where I needed to convert the data I was trying to leak into binary, but where the zero was a new line and the one was a space. And so like I wanted the model to basically write me a payload or like write a little server that would like handle that well and stuff. And because it was like weird syntax, like, you know, the AI has never been trained on binary that's spaces and new lines probably.
It
kept messing up the format. And I was like, just use your code interpreter tool to convert it. So then it like wrote it in binary, then converted it for me in like its little code interpreter. And that's like a really good pro tip. Like when you're dealing with stuff like you're talking about, like just tell it to say like, hey, you keep being inaccurate. Use your code interpreter tool here.
Yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, the code interpreter in that specific environment did phenomenally well. And I was really, I was kind of like jaw drop moment on that. I was like, I got to start integrating this a little bit more. And then your blog post came out like the same day and I'm like, shit.
It does take a lot of time to write a good prompt sometimes for these like really complex vulnerabilities that we're often chasing down as hackers. But I think that if you take the time to do it and give it to smart models like the latest Gemini 2.5 Pro or, you know, even O3 Pro, which just dropped, I think that they'll often surprise you. Like, I think that a lot of hackers would be surprised by how much it would speed them up or by how many just good ideas it's going to have.
And just sort of tangentially related to this and as a counterpoint to the whole agent thing, I've been following a little bit the Hacktron AI folks. And I think one of the founders, I forget who it was, I can't find the tree right now, tweeted something out like, this is the future of hacking. I set Hacktron AI to work on this and I went and grabbed a coffee and then I came back and I had four leads to follow.
Right.
And then, you know, I went and followed those and maybe popped one of them or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is an interesting, I think that's an interesting take because it's not necessarily saying that this Hacktron AI is going to just, you know, you're going to go grab coffee and come back. Hacktron is like, here's a report, you know, but it maybe it can identify things that are higher signal sketchy than normal programmatic tools can.
Yeah.
Right? Or non-AI using tools can. And then you feed those leads to, you know, a closer, right? We've talked about this a little bit on the pod before, how you've got various people in the with various skill sets in Bug Bounty. A lot of some people are like really good lead generators. Some of, you know, as far as like finding sketchy stuff, some people are really good exploitationists, right? Or exploitists, right? And they can close the you know, the vuln. And I think maybe another interesting position for AI could be that it will produce really good leads and hand it to a talented exploitist to close the loop on.
Yeah. So this is something I've talked about. Not only do I am I an advisor for one Hackbot company, but for the other ones, when I do like a call with these founders as like kind of like a VC scouting thing, I will often give them like really great advice just because I love adding value to the world and I want to see everything improve. But I genuinely think that how these Hackbot companies handle leads is going to be huge. And I think it's because exactly what you're talking about, right? Every lead is a potential vuln. And I think that some of the companies are over-indexing on fully black box when the reason why I mentioned in my blog post, like the human in the loop Hackbot singularity as like a midterm spot is because of exactly what you're talking about. And here's my exact quote on what you're talking about. I said, one good hacker and a Hackbot system working together will be able to out-hack almost everyone from a volume perspective. And that's what I believe. I mean, if I could feed you a list, Justin, of like, I don't know, 10 potential XSS and 10 potential CSPT and 10 potential RCE via command injection. And you're literally just like vetting them like, oh yeah, that one is a bug. Nope, that one's not. Yeah, that one is. If they're actually a decently high signal, even if it's only like 30% accurate, like you would be able to make a lot of money from just like reviewing bugs.
And it's almost like what we see with the critical thinkers hackalongs, right? Is like, you know, with the hackalongs, obviously we have a ton of super talented hackers, you know, participating in the hackalongs and in the critical thinking Discord. But I've been surprised by a couple people that you know, I would consider as like solid, like intermediate hackers, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that really are getting really good at some stuff, but are definitely fresher on the scene, right? Yep. And, you know, when we're hacking together, I'm going down one route and then almost every single time, somebody will drop in the chat and be like, hey, look at this sketchy thing that I just found.
Yep.
Right. So if, and I just love that, right? Because it's like, okay. And then, you know, I'll take that and close the loop on it and exploit it or something like that. Or maybe somebody else who's better than me in the chat will do it, you know, and it happens almost every time we do a hack long.
Yep.
Right. And I think that if just applying this to AI, if you can get the AI to be at a level of like a intermediate hacker as far as like intuition of whether a functionality is sketchy or not, then essentially hacking becomes, here's a bunch of leads from an intermediate hacker, skilled hacker. Now your job is to be the closer.
Yeah, I think it's much more likely that it's able to find the sketchy leads than it is to be able to be a closer. Like I think that the closer is going to come later. I do think that it's big upside. The big advantage it has to closing is infinite time, like near infinite time and near infinite attempts, right? So if it's trying to find a very specific payload that will bypass a specific filter, it can try infinitely, right? Assuming that the financial incentives align, it can literally try as many times as it wants. And it's infinitely patient, right? And so I think that really that's the advantage on it being a closer, is that it can just try so many things in such a short amount of time and you can scale it up so well. But I think in general, it's going to be much better at finding the weird things.
Those people that have taken notes really have a massive advantage now AI as well. Is like, you know, I have been a largely intuition-based and just reps-based hacker to this point. And like, you know, I don't have like a massive notion or whatever filled with how I approach every single target and every note from every live hacking event. And I'm really wishing I did now because this is a massive opportunity for us to say, hey, you know, sometimes if you change the host header, you know, on a password reset, you know, then it's going to trigger this thing, and just give them all of the weird shit you've seen, every single weird shit you've seen. Right. And then hope that it has the ability to properly implement that and alert you if something looks even remotely sketchy. You know, and draw those techniques back to your mind, because we've talked about this time and time again, how, you know, some bones are popular for a period and then you stop testing those and you're like, for whatever reason, you maybe you got shiny object syndrome and now you're looking at for this new.
Well, I mean, none of us are as disciplined as Space Raccoon to go through like a spreadsheet of like all the bones that I want to check across every API endpoint, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's a lot, man. It's a lot. And I think AI can really help with that. So. Yeah, man. For those of you that have really good details notes on your methodology, this is like a big dub for you.
Yeah, I think so.
Shout out to my boy Gretme. I know he has it.
I was about to say that exact thing. I was like, I know the guy who does that. So I don't know that I said all of my other like major points that I wanted to make with this. The other thing that I wanted to make a point of is I just think like, as kind of like proof to like call my shot here, is that I think we'll hit that human in the loop hackbot singularity by the end of the year. And there will be a company that farms, you know, 500 to 1,000 vulnerabilities by the end of the year. And I think that that's going to be very impressive. I mean, Expo's already like the quote unquote top hacker in the US. And I think that it's exactly what we're talking about, right? I'm sure that it's Dorado and Hypothermia or whatever. And you know, honestly, the bug bounty platforms need to decide how they're going to handle that, because it's kind of a shared account.
That's interesting.
But it is something that we need to think about.
Well, they had HackerOne released something on that, right? Like HackerOne hackbot. Yeah, and we like super, we super lightly covered it on the pod. But there was a write up from. One of the co-founders, Mikkel, on Welcome Hackbots, how AI is shaping the future of vulnerability discovery. We'll link it. We'll link it again. But yeah, I mean, I think that they don't really have any choice but to allow hackbots to
compete.
But maybe there's a separate leaderboard for, or maybe you can flag a specific account as like a hackbot account or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. So another thing that I wanted to get across with it was just positivity amidst job loss. Like, I think that there will be impact to hackers for sure in the long term. But I think in the medium term, people can be really encouraged because one, we will need human in the loop. So I do think the hackers should maybe think about what they want that to look like and maybe either make it known on social media or reach out to these hackbot companies and be like, I think that the best model for this is like contract-based work rather than like hiring these bug hunters. Like bug hunters love being full-time. I do. And so like, I would love if the model is such that I'm kind of like sponsored by Ethiac or whatever. And then I use that in my daily driver to both improve their product and splitting the bounties with them. And, you know, we kind of both get the exposure for it. I think that'd be a lot better. But I mean, honestly, even if you're a bug bounty hunter and you are kind of worried about this, maybe looking to apply to hackbot companies is a smart decision. I do think there will be a lot of money wrapped up in this for multiple reasons. One is it's just huge for humanity to like be able to secure everything in an automated fashion. Two, it's like a very strong nation state related superpower. Like I am a believer that AI alignment is like a really big deal. And the issues that could arise from a, you know, somewhat unsafely wielded AI, like if there's a nation state that we don't trust down the line, and they're using AI to do nefarious things, they're going to want to use it for biowarfare, and they're going to want to use it for hacking. And so by contributing to this effort, I think that you're kind of helping humanity in like a really powerful way too.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, my takeaway from your blog and just my experiences at that point was really, I need to begin the process of taking my methodology and what I'm doing and getting it into prompts and getting it into, you know, something that's raggable or something, you know, so that the AI can eventually use it once we have, particularly these more human in the loop microbots sort of thing going on. So I don't know. It's a little bit of a hard thing for me because I'm like, I don't really feel like taking a break from the hacking, you know, to really dev on this a lot and try to get it to a point where I can do this. But I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, I kind of need to do that. So
yeah, two things. And we're prone to go down rabbit holes. So I'm just telling you these so we don't forget to touch them.
Yeah.
One is what you're talking about right now. I think that I want to talk about the hacker kind of thought process as they exploit bugs. But the second thing I want to talk about with you is tokenization. I know we talked about that off air and I want to circle back to that.
Yeah. And also I want to, what we need to do is just go in the doc, go over to the doc right now and write some of those down. So tokenization.
Yep.
And what was the other one you said?
Basically hacker's chain of thought, really.
Hacker chain of thought. Yeah.
And what was yours?
Mine was this other note as well, which is the reason that I got out of the automation game, back in like 2022, is that I don't like coding as much as I like hacking.
Yeah.
Right. And I found that I was spending a lot of my time coding instead of hacking.
Yep.
And that changed a lot recently, you know, like with the onset of AI assisted coding. So one of the things I've considered is I've always, that passive income piece or of passively finding bugs has been really attractive. But it was offset by the thing I didn't like, which is that I had to code all the time. Mm-hmm. And that offset has been erased by AI a little bit, or at least lessened. So I am definitely putting more thought and consideration into going back into the automation game, whether it be hard automation or AI-based automation, with supplementation from code assisting AI.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the two things I want to mention, one was the chain of thought from hackers. This is just kind of a pro tip for one, when you take down your notes, but two, I think for these hackbot companies, and three, just for other hackers, the ideal context for an AI model when it's trying to exploit a CSPT is your thoughts. And I mean, literally Justin Gardner's thoughts, because I think you're probably one of the foremost CSPT people, right? And you have extremely good chain of thought in your brain, like basically your notes, why do you think CSPT exists here? Okay. Mm-hmm. Write that down. Okay. What is the first thing you're going to attempt to check whether it exists there? Okay. Write that down. Okay. It failed because of this. So your next payload is going to be what and why? And okay, that failed. Okay. Your next payload is going to be what and why? Oh, it worked. Okay, cool. So you found it. Okay. Now how do we leverage this into a vulnerability? Okay. What do you look for next in the application? Okay. Write that down. Right. It's like basically every thought you're having as you're exploiting something is the ideal context for an AI language model when it's trying to exploit the exact same thing. And so I've always wanted to have like Sam Curry's I've called it internal monologue. And I even made a little app called like internal monologue capture. I think that like internal monologue capture is actually a space for a product here. If there was some way where it would like continually ask you questions or ask you to talk out loud, and then it would capture that for you. Anyways, I think expert internal monologue capture is something me and Daniel Meisler talked about over a year ago when I was hanging out at his house at RSA, and it's still super key to today. So,
dude, abso-freaking-lutely, and I think that is so hard to do.
It is.
And I have a lot of experience with that because of the mentoring, you know, mentor-mentee relationship where. Yes. A lot of times what I'll do sometimes with these mentees is I'll hack on something and I'll just narrate what I'm saying.
Yes.
And my mentees are probably going to be like, shut the fuck up, Justin, because what it actually sounds like is, oh, guys, check this. And then I just like stop talking. Yep. And they're like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And I've been trying to get better at it. And anybody who listens to the hackalongs also know that I am very prone to start narrating something and then get hijacked by like, oh, I need to allocate all of my mental resources to this one thing really quickly.
Yep.
And then not finish my thought. But I think as you get more reps with that, that is going to be a very valuable skill. And especially if there's some product, like you're saying, that will essentially just be listening to me talk, because I feel like that is the most natural way of conveying your thoughts without friction to yourself.
Yep.
And then convert that into a chain of reasoning that the AI can consume to mimic your skill set in a specific area.
Right. It becomes basically the perfect system prompt for a sub agent that wants to exploit that same vulnerability. All right. Tokenization. So I found that quote from Confarthy.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening and you don't know what tokenization is, you need to go look it up, but I'll summarize it in like two sentences here. Tokenization is the way that AI models view the world because they've been trained on what are called tokens. Tokens are just strings that are associated to numbers. And those floating point numbers are like what technically the model outputs whenever it, you know, answers your question or whatever. It just gets converted back to the token, which is back to the string, which is sometimes a full word. Sometimes it's only a character. You can look up tokenizers to see how it works. But the whole point is tokenizers are the root of all problems. So anyways, I really love this. So this is from Andre Kaparthy, the father of modern LLMs and AI. He's like very well known, well regarded. Why can't LLMs spell words? Tokenization. Why can't LLMs do super simple string processing tasks like reversing a string? Tokenization. Why are LLMs worse at non-English languages like Japanese? Tokenization. Why is LLM bad at simple math? Tokenization. Why did GPT-2 have more than necessary trouble coding in Python? Tokenization. Why did my LLM abruptly halt when I sent it the string open bracket pipe end of text pipe close bracket? Tokenization. Why does it break whenever I ask about solid gold Magikarp, which you don't know about? You should go watch that YouTube video. It's called
solid gold Magikarp. What the
frick? Oh, you don't know about this?
No.
There's a thing called glitch tokens. So glitch tokens don't really exist anymore, but basically when they were scraping the data for training data from Reddit, there was a few tokens like solid gold Magikarp, camel case, but all with no spaces that resulted in a single token. So solid gold Magikarp is one token. And in GPT-2, if you ever mentioned solid gold Magikarp, it thought you were saying like F you or something. You got to look this up. There's like a YouTube video.
Wow,
about it.
Anytime
you said that, it would respond. It would like curse at you. It was really funny. So you got to go look this up. It's called Glitch Tokens and it's by Computer File on YouTube. I'll put it in the show notes. Anyways, so the whole point is our brains see the world in like we're somehow able to like switch between tokens. So we can see the world as words, like when we read a book, but we can also see the world as characters when we need to, right? Like special characters. And so we have like this kind of superpower that AI doesn't have. And so I was bringing this up to Justin before we started this episode, but I wanted to mention it because like AI doing things like HTTP desync attacks or request smuggling, it's basically impossible due to tokenization because it can't count. It doesn't really understand how to count the number of spaces it's using. And that's more of like an arithmetic thing, right? And so maybe it'll be able to figure it out if it like writes two parts of a smuggled request and then it sends both of them into Python code to count the number of characters to then set the context link. But it's going to be super hard. And that's an example of a vulnerability that like I don't know if AI will solve even 10 years down the road. Like it's going to be a vulnerability that it's going to take a very long time, like where maybe we don't even use tokenizers, because there's been some like theories that eventually we can just make each character a token and train a model that's eventually good like that. And if it viewed the world in characters, I think it could potentially pull it off. But anyways, tokenization is really fascinating and interesting, and I think that it does impact the amount of vulnerabilities that can and cannot get automated at the moment.
I definitely didn't think about the fact that before you mentioned it right before this episode, that these LLMs are, you know, thinking and living in the token world,
yes,
from an output perspective as well as an input.
Yes.
Like I knew that from an input perspective, but they're also outputting tokens. And if they don't have access to, you know, a specific set of tokens, then they can know they're not going to output, or maybe if the weights are off, you know, they're not going to output the token that you need, even though like that was very clearly iterated as the purpose or whatever.
Yeah.
I think the difference comes between like actual artificial intelligence and, you know, fabricated artificial intelligence here. And that is something that I really hadn't thought about.
I will challenge your last assumption there. We also hallucinate. Sometimes we can't think of the word. Sometimes it pops up in a different way. Like just because the method of thinking, I mean, I don't think that they're conscious. I don't think that they have a soul, and we don't have to get in all that. But I do think that like just because the way in which these top models think doesn't mirror exactly how we think, I don't think that means they're not necessarily reasoning. There's some really interesting research from Anthropic that shows that even before a model outputs a token, it passes through different circuits in its internal next token prediction that mimics very similar thinking. Like it's bouncing around on different topics that are all related to the answer, even before it emits a single token. It's very, very fascinating stuff.
Yeah, but that is very interesting. But I'm definitely not smart enough to make a qualified assertion about that.
That's fine. But what you're talking about there about like the words is like very fascinating. There are some weird token. I've been using Chorus. Mm-hmm. Chorus is like mm-hmm. a really cool thing. I used to use Misty.app. Now I use Chorus to like ask one question to multiple models at the same time. If you haven't used it, it's great. But I saw someone talking about it on X, and they were like, you know, Gemini 2.5 Pro putting in the cheeky Russian there. They asked the English question and it responded in English. All the models that it was answering in parallel responded in English, but Gemini 2.5 Pro threw in a random Russian word and it meant the exact same, like you could understand it if you read it in English, because it was some word that you could easily tell what it should have been in English. Mm. But it clearly just lived in the latent space of the weight at the exact same spot. And so it just picked the wrong token, you know, as it was passing through. And so anyway, stuff like that's really interesting. And I'm surprised we don't see more of it, but
yeah, definitely, definitely interesting. And I think going back to the human, you know, thinking versus AI thinking, I definitely don't know enough about that to make a conjecture, but I do think that, like you said, it affects the granularity of what the AIs can output. And mm-hmm. I think that perhaps I'm misconstruing how human neural networks work, but I think that a deeper understanding, like conceptual understanding of what a character is and what, you know, a character string mm-hmm. looks like, mm-hmm. Is something that differentiates. And as I'm saying that, I'm also realizing though that as a beginner, you think about an XSS payload as an XSS payload, not as an image tag and a source attribute and an invalid source attribute and an on error attribute. And, that's what beginner hackers are doing when they're copy and pasting these XSS payloads is like, they consider that one token rather than, you know, a deeper concept or different understanding of that specific payload.
I know you've only got 1 minute, but I had that exact same thought. I thought about how you could plug the hole of tokenization character by character would be basically to imagine getting a whole bunch of, conversations, like simulated conversations. You know how they like do training on like back and forth conversations? Imagine if there was a bunch of conversations, like fake conversations between like me and an AI or you and an AI or whatever, where it was basically like quizzing it on characters. So like basically what I'm trying to say is like, I wonder if we gave these top AI models a whole bunch of content about like what a character is and how it's different than like the word, like though, like for example, what are the tokens in the word strawberry? And it was expected to respond S-T-R-A-W-B-E. If we gave it like a trillion examples of those and threw that into the training set, if it would develop its own sense of what a character is in such a way that would improve the output. I actually genuinely think that could work. But anyways, it was just a thought I had.
Wow. Very interesting, dude. Okay. Like you said, I do have a hard stop, but, and I might throw you to the wolves here a little bit, Joseph, but, I think the conversation that or the concept you gave me about, context engineering is really interesting. So I don't know if you want to talk about that. You can bleep it. Richard can bleep it if you don't want to. But if you felt like it, you could spend a couple minutes just sort of explaining how difficult that problem is and how relevant it is to hackers, or we can cover it a different time, either way.
Cool. Do you have time to stay for it? Or are you going to drop?
I got to bounce.
Okay, cool. I'll stay and describe it. Cool.
All right, you got it, man. All right. Peace.
Yeah, so me and Justin, before we hopped on the air, we're talking about what I'm calling context engineering. It came out of a blog post from Harishi, but also the founder of LangChain, his name is Harrison Chase, was talking about context engineering and how it's going to be really important. I think it's like, basically, if you imagine AI as like this bleeding technology, and then you imagine that the way in which you like develop and make, what are they called? Agents. Like this is kind of like the year of agents is then kind of breaking technology on top of AI. So like we have like agentic behavior. And then on top of that, there's like sub agents and how do you hand over context from some agents to other agents, is what Harishi in this blog post, he posted about. Basically we may talk about this in a future episode, but Harishi Olakul is a the best wielder of AI, in my opinion. And he wrote a blog post all about how he was reversing the minified JS of Claude Code from Anthropic. It's like, oh, hackers want to do that all the time. So I think that'd be really interesting. And so I shared it in the Critical Thinkers chat multiple times. But in there, he calls these intermediates, but it's basically like the information that he has, that you have to hand off to get a task done. And so his kind of three examples are, you have to sometimes hand off information to yourself when you go to work on the same project on the next day, right? But then that's like the easiest form of handoff. Then the next step up is like you're handing it off to someone who also knows the project and the company really well. And then the next step up is like handing it to someone who doesn't know it well, or to an AI system that doesn't have all the context of like your company or your life or all the things that are going on. And so I think that's like pretty interesting. And it's basically, how do you manage context between agents? And I think that's going to be really, really key from a hackbot perspective as well, right? Because you may have like a core hackbot that hands off something to an agent and it doesn't pass back enough context for the core agent to really make a true distinguish, like a true validation of whether or not what the sub agent found is like a true positive or a false positive. And so anyways, that's just a cool, hard problem to solve. And Justin thought it was really neat. And I think it's something we should all like be like leaning into and working on and looking into. Super thankful for your all's time and attention. And I hope that you enjoyed the episode, and we'll see you in another week.
And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time. Trust me. All right, I'll see you there.